they are compiled belong to the SLMEC, like that much for an example. Over the past 10 years, they have been acquiring a lot of small employers, small players within the sector. That has been their pattern of growth over the past. That leads to displacement of jobs in other companies within the sector, whilst they might be growth, but the net effect is the destruction of jobs. The difficulty for most operators in the sector to access financing and credit on favorable terms means that large retailers already enjoy a significant advantage. Perhaps we should also note here the growth of these malls. It is not easy for an SME to sustain rental at housing at certain cities, for an example. So there are a number of factors that impact on the ability of small operators within the sector. The cost that small operators must carry are greater than the large affairs, and there are examples that we then raise in that context. Thus, the majority of the sector struggles to survive, and the impact of the merger in communities set by these firms and relying on them for jobs will be given easy. It's our submission, Madam Chair. Considering the sector.
You have put on table an intention before the appeal court. And if you listen to what I said earlier, I said you need to advise the chair if there are any issues that you feel have an impact or effect in what you have tabled. So, when listening to you speaking, it is quite clear that from the conditions that right, you begin to come, you know, to us. Swiftly enter into some of the issues. I understand you're trying to be as broad as possible, but I'm also cautioning that the issues, you should avoid to be direct on some of the issues. Because by implication, there are issues that really touch upon the merits of the case before them, on the appeal case before the court. I want you to advise so that I don't become unfair to you on the thing.
Maybe we should just clarify the premise of our submission. We had proposed
I don't think we need to get into that, no? But you can generally give us that. As I indicated, it's not within the business of the committee really to entertain what you have submitted. But the advice is on this matter that I'm dealing with now, there are issues of course, but in general this is the principle, you know, the submission to us. That's what I wanted you to do. Am I making your presentation difficult?
We just want
the intention, but I just want to help the meeting so that we do not falter in terms of what we have put before you.
No, we would just want to contextualize issues beyond the matter. Even before this proposed merger between the parties, we had tabled a proposal at NetLex for the convening of a summit involving all the stakeholders within the wholesale and retail sector to develop a national plan for the development of this sector because of our understanding of the role that it plays in the economy. And it's in this context that we clarify the structure of the sector, you see, and its role broader in the economy. Be it you have a proposed merger between Walmart and Massmart, those issues will be there independently of the proposed merger. That's the context in which we will leave those issues. Obviously, we will have to outline them in the proceedings, but they exist independent of the processes concerning the merger. I don't know if that addresses your concern.
It does to a certain extent. What I would request is that you just try to refrain from really getting into the issue that you have mentioned in your own submission, in your own notice, please.
Okay, no, we will try to do that. The point that we also raised about the sector is the issue of skills development. We believe that a vast majority of employees do not benefit from skills development and training within the sector, precisely because out of more than 80,000 employers, you only have less than 10,000 that are paying their levies through the CETA. It's an important point that needs to be taken into account and which we believe should be addressed through some policy of some kind. You see, broadly as a union, we still believe that sector becomes even more necessary given our recent experiences with this particular measure between these entities. We also note that in terms of, we won't go into the proposed measure here, including those provisions of the Act. But generally speaking, we want to raise the issue of prices as well, because it's one of the issues that is being used here to entice the broader population. Firstly, we support the need for foreign direct investment, as we know. But we believe that what we need is a responsible foreign direct investment. Foreign direct investment that does not undermine the developmental priorities of our country. The need to safeguard our agenda to create jobs, to eradicate poverty, and substantially reduce income inequality. And therefore, any foreign direct investment which undermines this objective will be regarded as irresponsible foreign direct investment. And we note that there may be more players who are keen to enter into the sector, who may contribute towards undermining our developmental priorities as a sector. And Chair, we also think that it is necessary to strengthen the competition authorities within this country from the Competition Act itself, as well as the Competition Commission in particular. We focus on the Competition Commission in this case precisely because it is no longer within its domain to take a decision or formulate recommendations at this stage. And we criticize the manner in which it has dealt with the merger. And we think that what will assist the legislature in this country is to look at means and ways of ensuring that you allow for more effective participation of workers at the initial stages of the sector, including disclosure of relevant information that should facilitate such participation. And broadly, we cover the impact of supply chain. It's our view that retailers, in fact, for manufacturers to sell their goods to consumers, they have to go through retailers. That's the most unfortunate part. And therefore gives retailers enormous power over their suppliers, including their ability to dictate prices that these suppliers have to charge. You have a choice. You can't go directly to the demand the supplier and the past goods. That's why we are concerned about as well. And in developing that policy for the sector, that should be taken into account. It's our submission, Chair, finally, in summary, that you have to strengthen that Competition Act, strengthen the ability of the authority to exercise their power within the Act in a manner that does not undermine our developmental objectives in the country. And the last point that we are calling for is for the convening of a summit involving all stakeholders within the center. We think it is within this committee to facilitate the convening of such a summit through like so that we can develop a broader agenda that safeguards our developmental objectives. We'll try it as much as possible, but unfortunately, to us, the two are intertwined. Thank you.
Really appreciate the concern. I agree that it is a bit difficult for you, but we really want to thank you for trying to give us as much as possible. May I then give the opportunity to the members to ask questions based on the submission? Mr. Mara?
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chair. I've got two questions. I haven't picked up here from the document the size of your membership, Sakawa's membership. But Sakawa has indicated to us just now that the unemployed in South Africa is between 17 and 18 million people. How does this compare with your membership? In other words, you know, just want to compare those, because it seems like there's a huge majority outside the formal employment. And in the light of the GDP of our country, the size of our economy, how do you suggest that more of those unemployed can effectively and competitively and sustainably become part of this more formal labour labor regime or environment, if I can call it that. The second one that I want to ask you, I first want to put to you that what we find in the modern economy, and I think Kosato or yourself that has mentioned about subsidies, Kosato that mentioned about subsidies in other countries that we find. So in other words, from a globally competitive point, it becomes incredibly difficult for even smaller business or medium-sized businesses to be globally competitive. And it seems like the only way that they can become more competitive is by using the scale of economies. And one way where the scale of economies find a footprint in is through acquisitions and mergers. Not only in this case, but I mean in every even smaller businesses that get together, or two smaller shops that get together and have one distribution point. So the scale of economies. How do you suggest that in the light of your criticism, that how can we become more competitive in terms of pricing in South Africa so that we can compete more globally? Is it productivity? Is it, you know, general competitiveness? Is it the cost of production? How do you suggest we must become more competitive globally? Thank you very much.
Thanks, colleague Chair. Siyabonga for the input. What I want to ask is, Are we not going to end up with employed, poor workers who will in turn want to burden the social grant system? Because the aim of cut that spend on their feet, that they must be able to support their families so that we have a less burden on the grant. So with the casualization, the temporary workers status, isn't that a danger of where we'll be going? But then the second question is, what will be the impact on plaza shops, township shops? I'm asking this as it must also be informed by our practical experiences of the malls that have that are finding themselves strong in such a place. Then the last one is what will be the impact on the in the rural areas, especially those poorest rural areas.
Thanks, Chairman. There's a line in the Lord's Prayer that goes like, and lead us not into temptation. And I said, I think this is very leading into temptation to us. Even questions that are restricted by the chairperson, but I'd like to fight that temptation. Yesterday we heard that Walmart was kicked out of other countries, including Germany and some other countries. And that, but from one of the presentations, we hear that there is some form of commitment that Walmart has made in the reinstatement of 503 workers who are said to be legally fired by the company, if I'm not making a mistake. Do you see this commitment as maybe a change of heart on the side of Walmart to this time, having learned from what has happened all over the world, that maybe they've changed the room for a chance for them to change and do the right things according to the wishes of the South African labor movement, which would be job security, and the end to what was referred to yesterday as data pricing. What is your comment about that? Do you think there is a room for change of heart in the operations of this?
Thank you, Chairperson. On your presentation, you spoke about the new workers who are participating in the development of training. So what are the causes or what are the hindrances of these workers participating in the development and training?
So the Mama confirmed that really the difficulty is not only on the side of Tibetans, but also on our political difficulties that we have to question. You know, and accept all of what we ask, and not to make any decision on your side. The South African government has put in place economic transmission policy that we normally use as SDE or preferential procurement policy to level the playing field, to make the situation conducive and with service of men, the policy, or maybe somehow do some contradiction to the policy.
Thank you very much. Mr. Tessin, that I shall read
I don't know that the question that we asked at labor component here to the president of Kosatu, those questions will apply to Zakhawu as people who are in the cold face of, you know, in this retailer industry. I think these are the people who can give us exactly what is happening. So the questions will remain. If you think that they are not going to lead you into temptation.
That should be left to me, that they are in trouble, to guide, which leads me to your question. It touches on the condition itself, and I don't think member, the presenter must really respond to that. Yeah, that is the question that you have asked. It is one of the conditions around the 503 retrenched workers. So I would request that the presenter refrain from responding to that. Can we then, the same principle apply? Where you feel the question really would entitle you to respond to issues as you intend to, you know, appeal on, please do not delve into that. Over to you.
Perhaps let's start with the first set of questions. It concerns the size of the account membership versus the unemployed. That's the crux of the question. First, you think that the question moves from an incorrect premise. It draws a distinction between union members and the unemployed. Our members, for an example, they are breadwinners. In most cases, women who had a number of families. And therefore, the premise is wrong. If, for an example, I'm a breadwinner, employed by Pick and Pay, with five kids, three of them being unemployed. That premise is incorrect. Because it's an attempt to counterpose employed workers to the unemployed workers. In this country, it is the employed workers who support the unemployed through the MEECA wages. That's the reality. I can't disown my child. There are a number of kids who have been taken to school by these very same workers who earn starvation wages. At the end of the day, they can't find employment. You can't disown your kids just precisely because it's unemployed. That's the reality that you want to raise the union. On the issue of global competitiveness and the scale of opportunities, when these monopolies corporate small players, they take them over, and the reality is that those small players disappear. That's the hard reality that we face. It is precisely because of this development that we invite all stakeholders, including employers within the sector, to sit together and develop mechanisms and measures, a policy that will be to acceptable to all stakeholders, which will assist those small competitors, traders, to survive within the sector. Unfortunately, with this dog-eat-dog situation that exists within the sector, the law of the jungle, survival of the fittest, and clearly the small operators cannot survive in such an environment. That's why we feel that there must be a mechanism developed jointly by stakeholders to address that situation. You see, when you talk about productivity and what have you, there are a number of factors that contribute towards that productivity. And this may differ from one sector to another. it also includes the style of management that you adopt as a manager operating in that particular company. If you adopt an authoritarian style of management, for example, when within this sector, it is workers who deal directly with customers on a daily basis, and therefore you need to appreciate their role and their input. And if you act in a manner which demoralizes them, unfortunately it will affect your productivity as a company. If only companies who value the involvement of workers in their own operation that survive within this sector. That's the point that we think needs to be addressed as well at industry level. The danger of social grants and especially in this sector with a vast majority of workers employed in atypical forms of employment. In some instances, like at Masmat, they are called flexi-timers. You may work 15 hours a week, for example. In some cases, you might just have enough to transport you from home to work. You may not even have money for lunch, for that matter, as a result of these working arrangements. In some of the strikes that we have waged in support of part-timers and flexi-timers in particular, some workers even say, no, maybe I should look forward to a state social grant rather than what I'm earning currently. That's the reality that we face. Hence the need to move towards gradually phasing out these atypical forms of employment within the sector and ensuring that these workers are transformed into full-time, permanent, secure jobs in line with advancing the decent work agenda within the sector. Well, on further shots, the impact is obvious. And by the way, Masmat operates a number of divisions. Some of their divisions operate within the wholesale sector, like your Jumbo Cash and Carry, for example. While they may be boasting about reducing the prices of whiskey, which has happened over the past 2 weeks, the only people who have been boasting about cheap prices are those who drink whiskey, claiming that they will reduce some prices drastically, but not ordinary people. But at Jumbo Cash and Carry, for an example, they already complaining about the impact on small traders. There you rely on people who run starter shops to buy from you so that you can then make your business. So once you destroy those small starter shops, you also destroy the wholesale sector. For example, there is a company called Metro Kitchen Care, which operates within the wholesale sector. At some stage it used to employ more than 10,000 workers. Currently it employs less than 1,000. That's the impact of some of these things within the sector and leading to unemployment. By the way, sometimes people who run these partner shops are workers who are retrenched by the very same companies that we are talking about here, hoping that they may survive through these survivalist methods of informal traders. And then there's the issue of Walmart's role in other countries, including those commitments that they have made. Firstly, in terms of labor rights, the explanation what we got from the president of Walmart was more of a chameleon-like explanation, saying they changed their color depending on the country in which they operate. That's how a chameleon works. If it's sitting with them, on top. No, they say that they change depending. If a country adopts authoritarian attitudes towards workers, they do so, but that's simply not the case. There are a number of instances where they have been fined precisely because of their problematic attitudes to workers. And in the USA, where more than two-thirds of Walmart workers are employed, they denied the basic worker rights and they have a tool quit. Vast majority of workers within the sector now are employed in atypical forms of employment. For an example, if you are a flexi-time or a part-time employee, you may work 3 days a week. Normally, they talk about this flexibility and arrange working hours for those workers on Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays. And those are the busiest periods within the sector. And if they are those busy periods, therefore there won't be any training for those workers who work during those particular days. This is at the core of denial of the vast majority of workers that opportunity to be empowered so that they can develop within the company. Well, the issues of procurement, they go back to our reasons why we are opposing this particular. Think that that will not happen as a result of the deal between the two companies. We did not hear the questions that were posed to Constant, but I'm told that they go into the merits of the matter.
They reserve the right not to answer the first one. If they feel their membership is a closed chapter, they can answer or not answer. That's it. Otherwise, the rest of the questions, I think, they deserve the first one.
No, we address the basis of the question in our response. We said we don't. No, you said the issue of the employed versus the unemployed. And the issue here is that we have 150,000 members throughout the country as a union. I'm sure that will satisfy your concerns. And with all the relationships between the unemployed and the employed, and some of the unemployed join the ranks from the very same union that we have. There have been massive retrenchments within the sector, and they are still in touch with the union, and in some instances, through cooperatives that we arrange, for an example, we assist in addressing the plight of those unemployed workers.
And how can we become more competitive? Do you have any suggestions?
No, we address the issue of productivity. But to us, productivity cannot be isolated from competitiveness, and we elaborated on how can the issue of productivity be addressed within the sector.
Okay. You have the follow-up?
It's not a follow-up, it's two questions. The first question, in your experience, what is the difference between a worker that's completely employed and registered with all the rights, far as the agreement between a worker and an employer is concerned, on the one hand, and a casualized temporary worker on the other hand. This was a general question, so I'm noting the constraints. So if you can also respond in a general manner.
In a country which is sitting with 36% unemployment rate and trying to create 5 million jobs, do you think that South Africa can alone, without foreign investment, come to realize this creation of 5 million jobs? And if your answer is no, then why resist foreign investment in this country? Because I think what I've heard from the presentation is that Massmart, Walmart, has the capacity to employ a huge number of people. Secondly, your resistance of Walmart, Massmart, isn't it going against the spirit of competition, business competition in the country? Also, if Walmart can buy cheap stuff from other countries and sell it cheaper to South African consumers, what then prevents other companies from being the same? Because they can also merge, buy big and sell cheaper, and allow the competition to thrive in this country. And as a representative of a union, I would believe that your interest should be to see as many people as possible employed in this country. And because that is the intention of the union. Even if some people may be employed on temporary basis, but at least they'll be able to earn a livelihood and put food on the table. Now, why is it that it seems we are afraid of competition, but at the same time, we support a free market system? Thank you.
Baba, forgive me, I was. When we say workers must earn a living wage, when things get difficult, like they are in South Africa, where we want to create many jobs, do we mean creating those many jobs, even if the benefit of the worker translates into a slave wage, is the question. And then the second question, what would be the consequence of employed poor workers who can boast I'm employed, but their salary meets only transport because they stay very far from the industry? And then the last, because they can't have an unemployment fund they can't have a pension fund. Isn't that enslaving the whole chain of affinity? Thanks.
Thanks, Dr. Master. Can you also advise us or just educate us on what is your understanding of a decent job? So just the definition of your own definition of a decent job.
Let's start with the issue of lower prices. As unions were the first people to campaign for lower food prices in particular in this country. At some stage we called for price control as a means of ensuring that you lower the prices of food. Therefore, we can't be accused of being indifferent to the prices that people retailers charge. That's the point that we want to raise. Some of yourselves, some people, opposed such a move. So the issue, we don't want to engage with the merits or demerits of their argument now, but the point that we want to raise is how you achieve lower prices is important. You can't be indifferent to how such lower prices are achieved. That's the point that we are raising here with regard to the transaction in question. Firstly, on foreign direct investment, we want to argue that we have stated from the onset that we support a responsible foreign direct investment. It's like you, if you are having a party at your place, you don't accept anyone just because those people can entertain those people who are attending that party. The unruly elements are stopped even if they can entertain a few. That's what we mean by adopting the attitude that we have adopted to the transaction and being in support of responsible foreign direct investment. We must accept that not every investment is responsible. If it leads to destruction of more jobs within the country, surely defeats the objective of job creation in this country. There are investments that may lead to more jobs being destroyed within the country. For an example, if you import more goods towards your country, you are destroying jobs at home and creating jobs outside your country. That's the reality which we face. You see? And therefore, we cannot just be blackmailed as union into supporting irresponsible foreign direct investment, because foreign direct investment is not equal to foreign direct investment. That's the question that we want to raise. As unions, our objective is to achieve full employment. But that does not mean that you must allow someone who will create 10 jobs and destroy 20. The net effect, if you do simple arithmetic, if you destroy 20 and create 10, the net effect is that 10 jobs have been destroyed. That's the reality that we see. And any transaction, therefore, will be judged on the net effect it has on job creation. And we can argue that even within the same group, you may create 10 jobs in one division of the group and destroy 30 in other divisions. The net effect is job destruction, which we are opposed to. That's the fact of the matter. When there was a point raised on the difference between workers who are employed with old rights and those who are temporary, casualized, and the issue is that the ones who are employed in atypical forms will use this term broadly. Atypical forms of employment, very precarious jobs, very little income, no benefits at all. At the end of the day, they become a burden on the state. People have no pension benefits, for example, no medical aid assistance, and no unemployment insurance benefits. Lastly, the state has to fund those employees. To us, you cannot separate the quantity of jobs from the quality of jobs. That's where we link the decent work agenda. It must not only lead to more jobs being created, but it must be jobs of such a nature that those who earn an income from such jobs will be able to sustain themselves, unlike a situation where you end up being subsidized by the state whilst you are employed, for an example. In the case of those employed in atypical forms of employment, the phenomenon what we have regarded in this country as the unemployed poor. In this sector, a large proportion of workers belong to the unemployed poor, earning less than 1,000 rand a month. For example, you can do the simple arithmetic. If you earn 10 rand an hour, and a month you only work 20 hours, the month, your monthly income is 200 rand. So you can't survive on 200 rand. You can divide it, the day is far less than 10 rand, which you need to buy a loaf of bread. The loaf of bread this day is about 9 rand. So if you earn less than 10 rand, you can't even afford to buy a loaf of bread. Surely that can't be called a living wage. That's the reality that we face, what we regard as grinding poverty within this country. We think that the basic income for any individual who is employed should be such that person should be able to sustain him or herself together with his or her family. That we won't put a specific figure here. But it's very important that people should be able to lead a decent life so that they don't live in abject poverty within the country. I've answered those that I have noted. Some were similar questions asked in a different manner.
Thank you very much, Mr. Obabunye. Yeah, Bona. And I take it that all questions were responded to, and members of the board. Thank you very much for your presentation, and once more apologize for restraining the way we have, but unfortunately that's how we thought we'd conduct the hearing. The next presenter would be Fowl. But I would want to request that we have a 10-minute stretch break before Fowl make their presentation. Unfortunately, there's not tea, but if you can, it's just a 10-minute comfort break. If we can be back exactly, at 12:30. We are now going to hear or get a presentation from Paul. In Allied Workers Union. And Mr. Marcel Muller will be giving us over to you.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I'm the General Secretary of the Union that is further downstream on the food production and supply chain. My colleagues from SACAO actually downstream. Now, we represent workers that are essentially involved in food processing, beverage manufacturing, as well as those that are in primary agriculture. So I thought I must just give that identity. I've been advised that I'll have to limit myself on issues that the committee would want to hear from us and not other issues that are still a bit subjudicate. Now, Chair, the several few years ago, I had to deal with issues that had potential or actual impact on job losses,
within the manufacturing, well, food processing and beverage manufacturing. And I'm starting this by example because I think it would be a useful information or example to notice it well. There were frozen chicken products that were coming from Brazil and that were beginning to threaten local chicken production, chicken processing capacity in South Africa, because they were procured by some of the retailers at very cheap prices. Another example was some of the sweets and chocolate products, again procured by some of the retailers from foreign soil, and those were beginning to call it, give some of the local manufacturers a run for their money. Now, I'm saying this because this new player in South Africa has taken much more huge global supply chain. And then for them to procure from any part of the world is going to be much easier. They can actually procure even from, you can call them low wage cost countries. I prefer to call some of those countries, in fact, sweatshops, where these products could be procured from. Some of the Southeast Asian countries and some of the Latin American countries, they can procure these food products, which products, at least those that have a bit of a shelf life, like frozen products, like canned products, and procure them and essentially get them into the country for much cheaper. And I'll explain why cheaper is not necessarily good news for the country. The reason why we are concerned is because if you procure from abroad, and then I think my colleague will do the site to explain this, if you procure from abroad, you essentially retain jobs abroad. If you procure manufacturing products, that means you retain jobs from where you procure from, if it's outside of the Republic, even if you bring those products much cheaper for local consumers. So, a rising number of unemployed people and a rising number of unemployment in the country as a consequence of job losses here or job creation abroad, I believe does not augur well for the country if products are cheap. So you may still buy products at a cheaper rate, but those people may not afford those products because they're getting unemployed. So the net effect is that the country suffers from foreign procurement of manufacturing products, even if they land in the Republic for next to nothing. That's the one point that we thought we must put across and across quite sharply. So what it means is that the problem I was referring to of having had to deal with procured 10 years ago frozen chicken products from Brazil will now become a problem in much more bigger scale, because the new player in the field
has even much wider and bigger global supply chains. So it's going to be pretty much easier for them, and the scale of the problem will essentially increase. Now, Chair, you know, and that is the concern we have. Now, what we have picked up, by the way, is that that's why some of the retailers that traditionally were outside of the food retail are beginning to get into food retailing. I mean, you know, the Woolworths and so on, because food retailing is kind of lucrative, as it were, as an additional source of revenue stream for retailers. So it's an important business for retailers to procure food. But in this case, I mean, to retail in food. But in this case, it will be much easier for people to put pressure through lower prices. Put pressure to other retailers. And when you say competition, it's good. When you say competition is good, you must also look at what competition does, not only ultimately in consumer prices, but what it does in terms of labor standards. And also in terms of standards of products, because you wouldn't want prices to go down, but the quality of product to be sub standards, and for the standards, labor standards, to be quite unacceptable, all in the name of reducing ultimate consumer prices. Because otherwise, again, the net effect is that it's all raised to the bottom, essentially. So, we can raise many things, Chairperson, but in conclusion, if the industrialization or reduced manufacturing capacity of the Republic, when procurement is going to be sourced from anywhere in the world except the country itself, we believe that it's not justified by ultimate reduced consumer prices that the masses, including an army of unemployed, may enjoy, or in fact may not enjoy, because to be unemployed, even if a frozen chicken pack was to be half the price, you'd still not be able to buy it as unemployed. So the consumer benefits do not really outweigh the cost of the industrialization and the cost of rising unemployment that will come out of foreign procurement. And that's where our concern is in a nutshell. And maybe I should just add, if you can, Chair. You see, as this player begins to drive prices down, there would be a horizontal chain reaction that other players in the retail stage will be forced to drive down the costs, and that certainly will include labor input as a cost. If they engage in casual labor as the new player in the field, others may be forced to do likewise. That's at the retail level now. And if they procure from abroad, manufacturers themselves will either have to look at cheaper ways of doing local procurement, and they may be forced to lower the costs of including that of labor. And like I said, it will be just a race to the bottom for everybody in the Republic. And that's where
our concern is. I mean, I'm aware of some of the manufacturing now beginning to say they either procure or follow suit and they hope to procure some of the their stocks from the sweatshops somewhere else in the world instead of maintaining local procurement and therefore local jobs in the country, because they would want to continue to survive. And maybe I must just indicate something, and this is a personal view, that if certain things are expected out of this new player, it is also important that some of those expectations are also given to their competitors. If we want, for instance, 100% local procurement, it has to apply to all the players. It can't just apply to a single player. I mean, that argument I'm sympathetic to, you know, because you can't have that undue differential treatment when it comes to local procurement. All the retail case would have to pursue this local procurement that we call it for. And pursue it almost on equal terms, because we want to retain manufacturing jobs in the food processing. Thank you, Chair. I was just speaking from the heart, and then I'll be able to find questions that I'm going to be asked.
Thank you, Dr. Masamula. There is a presentation from FAO. May we get questions or clarity from members? Tomare, Dadema Basman, Dade Chavez. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for your submission. There are two very important things that you have mentioned that is of a concern, I think, to many, many other people. The first one, you talk about the danger of deindustrialization. What is your suggestion? How do we turn this around and get, again, this industrial revolution of creating jobs and becoming more competitive and being a bigger global player, you know, being in a position to export our products all over the world, and what kind of platform do we need for that? The second one that you have mentioned is the danger of this chicken that was imported. And we have seen some time ago about chicken that was injected with water and things like that, which is a huge concern. You've mentioned it in this whole argument, which brings me back to a previous question that I've asked to other persons as well. We have got, in our opinion, we've got very good legislation. We've got supposed to have very good anti-competitive authorities. We've got customs and excise. Well, we've got some checks and balances. But you've raised this question specifically with regards to mergers and big players, this big player that is now in the market you have mentioned. Do you think that our legislative provisions is not adequate to deal with a big player that wants to bring in cheap and inferior products? Do you think that they're not doing their job properly if we have got the right legislation? And people like customs, I mean, we're supposed to make sure that inferior products, especially food, is not entering our market. And then, in other words, is there a trust or a distrust in what the authorities are doing and what they should be doing? And then the last one, can you also give me an indication of your membership and obviously the importance of that in our economy?
become a chair or also welcoming the input from Fatima Sebula. I wanted to ask the difference in as far as the impact on the discussion, the difference between a huge monopoly and on the other side, many friend producers. And another part, I wanted to understand the difference between temporary and casual workers vis-a-vis formally employed workers in the context of this discussion. And then also the urban area versus the rural and informal settlement area to contrast in, informed by this environment of our discussion. And one but last, the net effect, will they be felt more harshly by the poorest of the poor, or will they be felt more harshly by the rich? And the last one, on local procurement, which tend to promote local procurement if you compare a monopolistic company comparing it to a company with a number of companies in the same industry. Thanks, Commissioner.
Can you repeat the last one? The last part of your last question?
The last one, I was saying which between a monopolistic company and many companies playing in the field, you know, in comparison, which would have the net effect of promoting local procurement and local development.
Then, does not answer? Does he tell you
that? Were you around yesterday when Mangana Tennis made a presentation? No. He talked about the competition in pricing, and he tempted the predator pricing that big companies like this can afford to put aside their profits for 3 months. Or for one, like lowering the prices of goods to an extent that even the pensioners will save more than 50% of what they make with the pension in terms of what they were using for paying food. But in the beginning, in the first 3-6 months, or even possibly to a year, there will be a benefit that will be enjoyed by South African consumers. But during this period, that is when the smaller producers and the spaza shops and your smaller corner shop in Alexander will be kicked out, will be sold. But no one will go to them because chicken will be selling at half price for the next 3 to 6 months. But what is important to say is what happens after that period, when now they turn around to get what they've lost over that period of 6 months. He calls that period predatory pricing.
this predatory private, as you are a union that is in the food chain, mostly on production and preparation of food and others, how do you see this affecting the local farmer in Schoeman's Drive who was selling vegetables to fruit and veg in Robinson? What is going to happen to that farmer and the fruit and veg at the corner during these 3 months or 6 months or maybe a year period, if you are lucky? So I want you to comment how do you think that predatory pricing is going to affect, so-called predatory pricing, how is it going to affect this? But at the same time, how is that pricing in the process going to affect the quality of jobs and the quantity in terms of amount of food that is produced? How do you see that they affect that, and then what do you think needs to be done to ensure that we do not go into that vicious cycle that we have been caught by the data requirements? Thank you.
Thanks, Dr. Chabele. Oh, we welcome you. Can we then address questions at all? Okay. Gentleman from
No, thanks, Chair. I mean, one of the ways of not allowing the industrialization is through some of the mechanisms you are talking about, but also some of the trade policy interventions. In addition to strengthening customs control, strengthening quality assurance of imported goods, and many other things that you can do, you might need to have a strong policy, trade policy regime that will support either the continued existence of the industry or even much more industrialization program. So, you know, so trade policy becomes very important. But I believe also that competition act and competition policy could set that tempo. And I don't want to respect what has been advised not to do, to talk about the merits of this case vis-a-vis the, you know, the role of competition authorities now about the issue of what I would call industrial policy consideration within the Act itself. You know, as a call it a pattern with a basic economics of competition act, I don't want to enter into those debates right now. So, we need to do much more than it is done to ensure that we don't suffer the industrialization in the Republic. On the issue of membership, our membership is 127,000 across the country. But a larger chunk of that is located in food processing and beverage manufacturing. And we know that when in 1997 Big Bang trade policy rupture happened in this country, lots of jobs were beginning to be lost in that part of the value chain. Some subsidized products from Europe were beginning to have an impact. I mean, your dairy products, quite a number of products were beginning to have an impact on the quantity or at least the size of employment in the Republic. And that's why, you know, it's important to note that faith policy regime is necessary to be protected, while being respectful of some of the obligations we have to the World Faith Organization, but be protective and jealous of the industrial base of the Republic. And I hope I've answered Mr. Murray. I mean, I can come back on this issue if you can, Chairperson, if I didn't come across quite clearly. On what Member Mabasa said, look, initially a player can come in to provide a healthy competition, but using certain things like what some person may have referred to earlier, predatory pricing, and that player does not provide a healthy competition because he's meant to undercut competitors and actually ultimately flush them out of existence. And later, a monopoly will then begin to show its true color. That's what basically would happen. Initially, a competitor may come in, but if it employs methods such as predatory pricing, it is meant to upstage, to basically upstage other competitors so that ultimately it returns back to the days of monopoly and monopoly pricing. Because monopolies are going to do monopoly pricing ultimately, without any threat of competition, unless there's government intervention of sorts, including what my colleague said we were calling for at some point when there was a crisis of food prices in this country, some price controls. Unless those interventions are made, then monopoly pricing will always not be in the interest of the consumer. Or lack of pricing determined by healthy competition would not be the case if there's only one player in the market. So that's a problem. On the issue of temporary versus permanent jobs, you know, one of the things that are obtaining in the Republic right now is that income inequalities are widening, and that's why we are the most unequal society in the world. Just having knocked out Brazil out of the way because of the increased remuneration disparities that you find in workplaces. That's part of the reason why income inequality is rising, or rather widening in a manner that it's happening. It is also fed from increased remuneration disparities that are happening in the workplace, but also it is fed by the quality of jobs, or at least the quality of pay that workers are getting, whether they're getting casualized and therefore get to earn initially half of what they used to earn when they were permanent employees. And we're saying that with the examples, and my colleagues in Takawa are better placed to talk about the impact of this on the retail, at the retail level. But at the manufacturing level, if manufacturers, and this relates to the question that the chairman, by the way, asked, at manufacturing level, if you cannot compete with, call it imported competition via foreign procured products as a manufacturer locally, you would have no choice but to either close shop or reduce the size of employment or even affect the quality of that employment by employing casuals instead of permanent staff, because you ought to compete with a foreign procured product. That may be subsidized from Europe, that may be from a sweatshop somewhere in South or East Asia, and that may come from a very low wage cost in Latin America. So, a manufacturer that procures local, that basically supplies local retail and manufactures locally without importing will be forced to do some desperate things like the ones that I'm referring to. So, you know, the issue of us, and I hope that I understood you on the urban versus rural area, I don't see how with this new player, and perhaps I'm open to pursue, I'm open to enlightenment, how will the new player get to see some uplifting in the standards of rural dwellers, either out of their pricing or other benefits that they hope to bring to the market. I don't know if you remember, but I understood your question. But if I didn't, I would be happy, I would be glad to find it again and then respond appropriately. Look, a big player like this one will certainly not be forced unless if there is a set of conditions forcing it to procure locally, will not be forced to do so after the lapse of the conditions that it may have volunteered to adhere to. By the way, it kind of volunteers to claim the conditions to itself. So it will do so 2 years, will pass, 3 years will pass. After that period, then we'll see a true monopoly behavior on the part of this big player. Initially, by upstaging every competitor, and ultimately by becoming a monopoly player with monopoly pricing. You know, I remember in the early 90s, when Pepsi wanted to come into the country, Coca-Cola basically lowered prices like you can't believe. And Pepsi-Cola could not survive for a good couple of months, if not just over a year, because of what the Chamberlain called predatory pricing. It had to do mass discounts and other ways of keeping Pepsi from surviving, or from sustaining its operations on its return after the sanctions of the 80s to the Republic. So all what I'm saying is that predatory pricing will ensure that there's no healthy competition ultimately. And the benefits that may have accrued to the consumer in a short run may not be guaranteed in a long run. So I hope I've tried to answer all the questions that were posed, including the one by Dathen Chabeleng earlier on.
Thank you very much. I think, yes, you have. I've got the notes in those. I've written them down and managed to answer all of them. Which one is that the mother? Is that the one on local procurement? Rural urban in terms of called poor support? Yes, can you come back? Yeah?
No, I was, my question was when you talk of disparity in South Africa, you talk of income inequalities broadly. But these inequalities are also reflected versus rural. So my question is, where a big monopolistic player comes into the market, how does that player impact on that dimension, noting the family, you know, so that when we talk of the primary person employed or the tax chaser, we don't talk about that as a unit, but we also look at the same thing. Thanks for the
coach.
I'm going to try my best. I mean, it's a very kind of difficult question, as it were. And I'm going to give some of the experience of how even those who are in healthy competition, when it comes to pricing at rural areas of products, you find that they are more expensive because of either distribution cost, transportation cost, and so on. You find that products are a bit cheaper and maybe slightly cheaper in urban areas than they would be in rural areas, because ultimately a spaza shop owner in Hamarishan would be, you know, he's been carrying several costs until the products ultimately are in the spaza shop. So the prices normally are, you find them a bit higher than in the urban center. Now, if you ask me if the role of a monopoly player would assist to address that, I would say my experience tells me that it won't. But if this specific player, because of predatory pricing, because it wants to squash out other players in the market, yes, in the short run there might be benefits even to rural dwellers, but in the long run there will be a return back to the good old days of monopoly pricing.
Thank you very much, for the presentation and also the responses that you gave to the questions from me. We will now move on. The next presenter is Wilma, and the CEO is Hutchinson, who will be the one making the presentation. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My title is the CEO of Asmart. Thank you very much. With your permission, I'll read from a recently prepared script. Honourable Chairperson, member of the Portfolio Committee on Economic Development, and other members of Parliament, members of the media, and members of the public present, good afternoon. I would like at the outset to express my gratitude to the Portfolio Committee for the clarification given by the Honourable Chairperson at the start of the hearings yesterday as to the parameters of the hearing into the Walmart-Massmart transaction. Now that we understand the rules of the hearing, is it evident that our written submission traverses territory that is now beyond the scope of the rules allowed by the committee? For the record, our written submission was prepared in accordance with the advert placed by Parliament in the media, the terms of which have since been clarified and narrowed. We noted how Ms. Coleman was obliged to enforce the rules with various participants in these hearings thus far, and will accordingly limit our comments to the prescribed rules of this committee. We will therefore not refer to the contents of our written submission. My comments today focus on the process, on the merger process, and how the process impacts employment, industrial and economic development, and local manufacturing. This, to my mind, is a useful exercise. And given our own recent experience, I'm happy to share with the committee in the hope that this assists in your deliberations. The point of departure is that mergers in South Africa are highly regulated, particularly in the context of listed companies. Various regulatory authorities have jurisdiction in these circumstances, including the Takeovers Regulation Panel, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, the Reserve Bank, the National Treasury, and specifically the Competition Commission and the Competition Tribunal. Also, the merging parties have to comply with the provisions of the Companies Act enforced by the courts. In addition to the formal processes described above, informal interaction and social dialogue with stakeholders is a natural consequence which runs parallel to the formal process. In our experience, the process is rigorous and generates a high level of involvement from all interested stakeholders. These stakeholders are provided with various opportunities to have their say, including through the formal Competition Commission investigations, the Competition Tribunal public hearing, shareholder approval meetings, and then formal social dialogue encouraged by the process. The competition process can take as long as 12 months from the submission of the requisite merger notification to the Competition Commission. The Commission's investigation process is inclusive and inviting of widespread participation. In fact, the Commission seeks out submissions and as such is not generally necessary for a participant to have an apparent direct stake in the matter. For example, anyone can make a submission to the Commission by way of a simple letter or even an oral submission on its own accord, with or without invitation from the Commission. There is certainly no need for interested parties to incur substantial costs in making submissions, as they do not have to be made through legal representatives. In addition, the public hearing before the tribunal is both transparent and inclusive, with the tribunal able to play an inquisitorial role by itself, asking relevant questions and seeking input of the appropriate parties, including experts, rather than passively adjudicating. We must not underestimate the continuing role that the competition authorities will play in enforcing the provisions of the Competitions Act in the post-merger environment. The Competitions Act is comprehensive in prohibiting anti-competitive behaviour, such as predatory pricing, attempts at market foreclosure, and other abuses of dominance. Even individuals or small businesses can trigger an investigation by simply making a complaint to the Commission or bringing impugned conduct to its attention. Thus, our overall view is that the process works. However, our experience shows that the process can be finessed by making some improvements. More importantly, the process must be predictable, both in terms of procedure and timing. The Competitions Act provides the merger must be assessed in accordance with two broad criteria. The impact the merger will have on competition and the impact the merger will have on public interest considerations. Public interest in the Competition Act focuses on addressing employment concerns, the effect of merger on firms owned by historically disadvantaged individuals, the impact of the merger on a particular industrial sector or region, and the impact and ability of national firms to compete internationally. However, the actual wording employed in the Act is perhaps too loose and does not give adequate guidance as to how public interest issues should be balanced with competition considerations. The role of employee representation in merger proceedings also needs to be clarified. For instance, it is not clear whether participating trade union is doing so in the interest of its constituent members employed by the merger entity, or whether it is fulfilling a broader mandate in relation to all of its members, both within and outside the merged entity, within and outside the industry, and within and outside the country. While the competition law proceedings are certainly comprehensive and inclusive, there is perhaps a need for more vigilant policing of those who are entitled to and do participate. Failing this, the ability to frustrate legitimate transactions through employing delaying tactics may very well scupper the transaction. In addition, such tactics are often used to leverage a negotiating position. There also seems to be a misperception that the competition authorities cannot rely on other authorities such as the Labour Court, the National Treasury, the Department of Labour, and the Department of Trade and Industry, amongst others. The implication is that the Competition Commission is being asked to impose conditions that are already covered by our robust regulatory environment. In our opinion, that the existing legislation and enforcement mechanisms are more than sufficient in regulating mergers and their potential effects on employment, the economy, small business and manufacturing, all stakeholders are well represented and afford sufficient opportunities for their concerns to be addressed. We believe the Portfolio Committee should be cognizant of the perceptions of foreign investors on the attractiveness of South Africa as an investment destination. Before I conclude, Madam Chairperson, in terms and in response to the national challenge raised, I'd like to add that we intend to assist by creating 15,000 jobs over the next 5 years, We're going to procure an extra 60 billion rands of food over the next 5 years. And we're going to work closely with local manufacturers, small and medium enterprises, and black-owned businesses to develop their businesses. In conclusion, I thank the Honourable Chairperson and the Committee for the opportunity to address you on these issues. This concludes my oral submission, and I make myself available to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Simpson. Can we be afforded the facility to have that presentation, because we do not have, and in view of your introduction, I guess it's important that we have that, the one that you have here, for 2020.
With some edits, I can ask if that doesn't reflect completely my submission, as it was an oral submission, but I could ask our representative to hand out a copy to the...
Please, we'll appreciate it, of course, we want to refer it, and...
We'll hope for now.
As this board is here, representing the legislature of Parliament, we need to have records of what the trust has in the
One of our representatives is getting copies now.
And I guess members would want also to use it as reference when asking questions, because we were so fast that I guess it was a bit difficult for them to catch now. Those who manage to catch up, can we then give you the opportunity to ask questions? I've noted that Mr. Julie, Mr. Mare, Mr. Mabaska.
Chairperson, you will find me if I'm transgressing the aspect. I'd like to check whether Walmart Smart is compatible with the labor laws of the Republic of South Africa. If so, can you elaborate which laws you think they are not good for? Economy, for which one do you think they are good? And number two, with the saying of local is better, what is your take on that one? Are you prepared to procure at local? If not, why not? If so, why?
As a politician asking a question. Thank you, Madam President. Gunnar?
Thank you very much. Yeah, that sounds like a written question for a written answer to the minister. Would be quite right.
That's from the GA.
Okay. He's learned. Thank you very much for the submission, much appreciated. Under the circumstances, which was obviously very challenging and difficult. Two questions. Can you give us an indication of your total workforce in South Africa? Then secondly, just your view on empowerment of your employees. What is your view on that, benefits for employees? Or are they just a stepping stone towards bigger profits? Just your view on that, please. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr.
Thank you for the chair, and thanks for the input. My question is...
Can you limit this up and down in the a simple teacher can help us with the tradition of the system, so that we don't have this. What are the steps to set the method?
The foreseen consequence of what is happening. Would I be right if I conclude that Walmart measure is going to result in a monopoly consolidation in relative terms, relative to what is currently in South Africa now? Then my second question is, will we say that this, do we see inequalities being narrowed as a result of what is happening? And when I say inequalities being narrowed as a result of this, I want to assume that we all agree that South Africa is one of the most unequal countries in the world, so that any economic player, especially the big ones, they should do so with strategies of contributing, you know, to the benefit of the country. And then my third point is local procurement. Is this guaranteed to be exercised indefinitely, or it will just be exercised during the introductory stages? And what would be the comment on the urban versus rural and informal as a result of this measure?
Not in the yeah.
Broadly speaking, what would be the consequence? The last one, I was saying, what will be the impact on the urban situation versus the rural combined with the informal situation?
Thank you very much. Mentor Jesse?
Someone is going to the presentation that I contact later on in the morning. There's a statement for myself. For the first thing, our local major control is not a major word in the first place. The only prevent is becoming worse as a result of the situation. Other presenters as well are present or rumors in so many ways. I would like to ask you to elaborate or unpack what is saying, what are the challenges by this evening. You can elaborate.
Thanks, Mr. President. Let me try again. Thanks, Chairman. It's always nice to hear the other side. Thanks for the presentation. Just one point of clarity. Point 12 of your presentation. The role of employees represented is in better proceedings. Also needs to be clarified. You create an impression that the unions you're talking to are not involved in this major discussion in good faith, that they might be responding to an international mandate against the company. But that you imply that they are not necessarily, you have a feeling that they are not necessarily representing the interest of the workers they represent. That is in bullet point number 12. So I just want to know if you
because it implies that there is something happening that we don't know about, that they campaign against Roman. If you could give us more of that. You talked again about creation of job creation, 15,000 jobs in 5 years. What would be the quality of the jobs? Will it be temporary jobs, as Mr. Mola was saying in Sakau, that the farmers Sakau, that there is a lot of casual labor, you know, casualization of labor. Of course, there is an agreement that you are going to respect the agreements that were made in the past with the union for a period of 2 years, if I'm not making a mistake. Then what is going to happen after that period? Are you going to review and make a change and say, we, because you no longer hold the threshold of this number of workers, so therefore Sakau is no longer recognized? But if you are using casual labor, then it means, because casual labor cannot be unionized, because once they get unionized, in some instances they get victimized. Does it mean that agreement after 2 years could find Sakau knocked out of the game? Or the other, you know, unions in the retail industry?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Dr.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I must first apologize for the fact that I wasn't here much earlier, and therefore I'm having a hiccup while I'm talking about making sure of it. But regarding this, my question, Ordinary Masmas, would be to understand how much is in a position to enhance growth of a multiplicity of local producers. There's a question that was asked much earlier by Dr. Chavez, and made an example of a human drive producer and the impact of a company like Masmas to such producers. Especially in the context where South Africa is having challenges and producing food for its own country. What is the impact? And the other one is the percentage of the product. What percentage of the local vis-a-vis the importation from outside? Is there any estimation? And the last one, I'm not sure whether this one is moving out of order. This is a question of the sensitivity on inequality of subsidization at the level of the World Trade Organization by different countries on production. Are there any sensitivity when it comes to innovation or taking that into consideration as they import, that there are such inequalities and they're around the world as we import from this country?
There are two questions that I feel need not to be answered as soon as the lady dwelt on the matter of the case. That is the one on guaranteed local procurement and the one of the period of 2 years creation of jobs. I think the creation of jobs, there's nothing wrong with it over 5 years. I think that's part of it you can answer. But what happens after 2 years, because that's something that I think it actually affects tribunal outcome condition on the 2 years. But the rest, I guess, they are within the condition. Over.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson, and thank you, Honourable Members, for your questions. Let me run through them and do the best I can. The first question I've got here is Mass March or March comfortable with labour laws in South Africa? I think we would say we are comfortable with the labour laws as they currently stand. We think they create a nice natural tension between employers and workers. There are many mechanisms available to prevent abuse, such as the Quality Court, the CCMA, the Labour Court, the Department of Labour, and various other mechanisms. I think that also creates a very good protection for the rights of employees in terms of collective bargaining and union representation. Much of the debate we have about whether or not Massmart can recognise or Walmart recognise or de-recognise unions is a moot point, as it is covered in the Labour Relations Act. Much of the questions about can we reduce workers' terms and conditions, again, are covered in the Labour Act, and the reality that we have to negotiate all these things with the union representatives, I think is then a self-evident point. And I have difficulty debating it beyond that. I think the laws of the country are very good, and we can rely on them. On local procurement, Madam Chairperson, I'll take your guiding and not comment on it. If I could perhaps then help the committee answer the questions, refer them to the record that is publicly available in terms of the tribunal hearing. A lot of debate was had there, and so I think all those questions will be answered merely by examining the record, which I'm sure is available to this committee. In terms of the total workforce in South Africa, it's around about 50,000. A view on empowerment of employees, that Massmart prides itself as being, if not the most empowered retailer in South Africa, at least one of them. In fact, if I may be allowed a moment to boast, our empowerment transaction paid out a total of 500 million rand to just under 10,000 employees as part of our Tutti Kwame scheme. Those employees have retained the other half of the shareholding, so today that other half is worth another 500 million rand, and I would label it as the most successful empowerment transaction in South Africa. We continue, Walmart has committed to increasing the empowerment scorecard over time, and so we will continue to, as directed by the very good, if I may say, BEE Act, continue to invest in skills development, invest in our employees, invest in ownership and all other dimensions of the BEE Act. We do so not only to comply with the law, but with the moral responsibility that is required to address the issues of the past. Yes, just perhaps some technical questions to the question about will the merger result in monopoly consolidation. I would be honest to admit it's every CEO's dream to grow and to grow market share, and ultimately it's the commercial objective to try and become as big as you are and to have a higher market share as you can. I would point to the fact that Massmart currently enjoys shares of less than 20% in all of the product countries we participate. We will try and raise it as high as possible. I see almost zero chance of us ever becoming a monopoly, although we'll do our best. Even in those circumstances, if I could remind the committee that the laws of the country are very clear about monopolies. We have lots of monopolies, particularly in our supply chain. So many of the food producers are in fact monopolies. And the rules about how you're allowed to behave and the various mechanisms about how to deal with abuses of monopoly are really covered in the Competition Act quite extensively. I just repeat my view is that it will be very difficult given the very good quality and size of the competitors in retail already in South Africa for us to achieve that position. I'm just having a little bit of debate about whether I can answer the question about the inequalities being narrowed as a result of what's happening without being able to refer to any of the conditions. it's difficult for me to say. I must say I spent a lot of time worrying about consumers, and so I'm absolutely certain we'll give consumers better prices, and to the effect of that helps with reduce the level of inequality. I spend a lot of time taking responsibility and worrying about our employees, to the extent that I can give them better lives, or we can give them better lives, through training and development and career opportunities. We'll certainly do that. In terms of the national objective, I defer to your view on whether or not this merger will or will not do that. In terms of the urban versus rural effect, again, I'm not an economist, so perhaps I'll just use this question to point out that there are many challenges facing the country, perhaps the world, the country, and the retail industry. Refer to specialization, refer to difficulty of SMEs to survive, refer to urbanization. These are challenges of the country. And the point I'd like to make is that they've got nothing to do with the merger, and therefore whether Walmart owns Massmart or not will not affect these issues. However, as a committed corporate social citizen, Massmart is and will remain focused on investing in the community that we operate. We will do so again in the guidelines of the DEE Act. We'll continue to invest in education, rural women, and youth development as we currently are. We have a good track record in that respect. And I think with Walmart's support, we'll maybe be able to input that. In terms of the commerciality of will Massmart's nature of trade improve the relative lives of rural people versus urban people, I wouldn't be able to speak to with any expertise. Yes, perhaps if I can just refer to the question about our job is to make the world, the quote I think was not to make the world a better place, but to not make it any worse. Those comments are attributed to the Competition Tribunal in their ruling and not us, so we would be unable to explain them. Those comments are attributable to the Competition Tribunal, taken out of the ruling. They weren't made by us. Right. It was certainly not my intention, sir, to impugn that the unions were acting at all in good faith. It was merely to bring to the attention of the committee that an organisation such as Sukawu, whom I know takes the representation of its members very seriously, is also representing the interests of our competitors and therefore has a different perspective to us, in that perhaps the employees of Massmart, and I would suggest that they are extremely comfortable with the transaction and happy and excited about the transaction. The employees of our competitors may be less so. And the Act does not, I think, give any guidelines to the union as to whether or not to represent Massmart employees' interests or the interests of our competitors. And I was just maybe pointing out that would be a useful clarification in their role, both for us and their market. In terms of job creation, we subscribe to the principles of sustainability. It's certainly never our intention to hire someone and then release them. Every time we have to retrench, I consider it a personal failure, and we'll be happy to admit that. We at all times appoint people for permanent positions. In terms of the issue around casualization, at the risk of annoying my Chicago colleagues, the reason we have to employ temporary workers, actually called flexitimers, and let me also state for the record that they're employed by contracts which are approved in the sectoral determination as part of NEDLAC, so they're not some invented contract. The reason we need those staff is because Sukawu's members refuse to agree to shift work. Now, as you as shoppers will know, you prefer to shop after hours and on weekends when you're not working. Our agreement with Sukawu does not allow us to implement shift work, and therefore we're forced in hours outside of the traditional 8 to 5 hours to employ other people to service you. And therefore, it's, you know, it's our responsibility collectively between myself and Sukaru that we address that issue and hopefully get to a point, which is my ambition, is that every employee of MassMart is a full-time permanent employee, enjoying all benefits, both medical aids and retirement benefits. But we can only do that when our permanent contracts allow shift work. In terms of the question about how we will enhance the local manufacturers, let me just perhaps, and also if I might try and address your question, we don't know the answer exactly as to how much product is manufactured locally. This is an obvious problem because of, you know, sometimes manufacturers change sorts of production. For instance, the example I use is I don't know whether Tiger Brands, who manufactures and distributes baked beans, is buying their baked beans from South Africa or someone else, or whether they're buying their tomato paste from South Africa or somewhere else, or whether they're buying their tins from South Africa or somewhere else. That, in fact, is a decision that changes over time and is actually a product of trade policy and law. And so I have very little either knowledge of where products are made or influence over where they are made. These are issues that need to be dealt with, as we've said over and over again, by government in terms of trade policy, industrial policy, labor policy, and various other policy mechanisms. We are, although it's an overused term, simple retailers. We buy the majority of our products actually from companies registered in South Africa. I would say the number is over 95%. We tend to continue with that. The trick is where do they buy the product from? And perhaps the focus is incorrectly put on us as to determine where these products are manufactured or not. Nevertheless, let me give you my best guess, which is I believe that 60% of goods we sell are manufactured locally. I probably minutely stepped over some of your rules there, and I apologize for that. I will enjoy the same attitude you gave other presenters.
Thank you, I don't know whether you are able to answer the question to the meeting. Are you satisfied with the two of them?
I think I'm satisfied. There was an issue that I said, you ruled me out for that. Agricultural subsidization and within the context of world trade organization, are there any sensitivities on that issue?
Yes, so perhaps I'll try to answer that with my final question, which is, as I said, they're beyond our control. So I would say there is sensitivities in terms of the sustainability of supply. We never would shift a source of procurement based on a short-term advantage that's perhaps gained by a currency move or an overproduction or perhaps the government elsewhere in the world intervening to subsidization. We tend to focus on long-term procurement from sources. However, I must note that, as I say and repeat, it's beyond our control because our suppliers mostly make those decisions and not ourselves. We are very sensitive, though, to the legality of the source of production and the quality. And so we have, and these will be strengthened by joining the Walmart group, very strict rules, for instance, about child labour and sourcing from any supplier who would ever use child labour. And there are many examples of things that a supplier, whether locally or internationally, would contravene that would stop us sourcing from them. The details of that are probably available on our various websites. But we take the responsibility of supply. Specifically those about subsidizations, I would still argue that is a matter of government and trade policies and to negotiate through the various World Trade Organization bodies.
Thank you. Any other question that is not is that for us? Okay. Let us hear, please.
In the 2K's presentation, 2011, the last line, there's no active guidance for how public interest issues should be balanced for the consideration. You agree with me that there is unfair competition together with this community crisis, ethnic issues close down, people lose jobs. And in any country where there's high rate of unemployment, there is high levels of poverty and eventually high levels of crime. And as a result, there will be high levels of infant mortality rate and also high levels of crime. And all of this constitutes the public interest. That is, they don't understand how the issue concerns the public interest. If they don't understand how what is it.
Thank you, Mr. Jesse. That the board to him.
Thank you, Chairperson. I want to check how do you see inequality gap being narrowed in your campaign? Do you have a plan or a mechanism of narrowing the gap of
traditionally, usually, a monopolistic behavior is not encouraged. Will you agree that this measure goes more towards a monopoly behavior rather than going the opposite direction? I'm asking this noting that a monopolistic company usually gobbles these little ones, like the other shops in the township, the small dairy, butcher meat in the township, in the rural areas. Aren't we going to end up with that dilemma?
Conditions of my participation. Maybe let me just quickly browse so I can respond to this question, then I can come back later on.
Thank you. I suspected that you did not get that. Can you respond to
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. In terms of the comments I made about the balance between public interest and competition law, doesn't in any way imply that I don't recognize that there are serious public issues to be considered and that they exist. I was merely just pointing out that I would imagine it was difficult for the tribunal to know how to balance them. And if I use simple examples, if 15,000 retail jobs are going to be created and 4,000 manufacturing jobs are going to be destroyed, how does one weigh one versus the other? If Massmart and Walmart can bring, which is perhaps what we estimate, about 5 billion rands worth of savings for consumers, now the economics say that 5 billion rand savings is going to be spent by consumers in other industries. How does the competition law explain to the people who have to preside over it how to balance these issues? So I hope that answers your question. I no way implied that the public interest issues weren't real and serious and need to be addressed. On the how are we going to reduce the inequality gap now in mass wants? I'm unable to answer if that forms one of the demands of the Chicago appeal. On do I support IPAP and the new growth path? I'm not an expert in them, but everything I've read about them leads me to believe they're excellent policies and programs, and that I may disagree on small matters with them, and I think that they both fundamentally seem to address the challenges of the country. On the question of monopolistic behavior, I assume in answering the question you're talking about a company who abuses its monopoly to raise prices and force other competitors out of the market. So my answer clearly is the Massmart-Walmart merger changes nothing in terms of the competitive environment in South Africa in terms of competition law, because they have no retail presence here. So Massmart, prior to the merger, was about 50 billion rand turnover, and post the merger is also about 50 billion rand turnover, and it doesn't change the competitive landscape at all. If you're referring to that, the fact that Walmart's just a very big company and that we should be fearful of it performing in a monopolistic way in South Africa, I would say that if you first of all look at the track record of Walmart, if it has any faults, it's accused of lowering prices too much. And that's all it does and all it's focused on. And so there's certainly no reason to judge the Walmart business on its track record that it ever lowers prices and later then raises them, which I assume is what you're referring to. Once again, I point to the fact that being large and having large market shares doesn't necessarily imply that you're bad. In fact, some of the best companies of South Africa are large with large market shares. It implies that really you should be judged on how you behave and not how you look. And in that respect, I believe the competition authorities are more than sufficiently empowered and more than capable of taking on anyone who starts behaving in what you would term monopolistic behavior. We certainly would like to distance ourselves from anyone who behaves that.
Thank you for the responses. Can I then give to Mr. Malameda before I ask him?
Thank you, Chef. The first question relates to the impact on employment. As we speak now, Pick and Pay, which is going to be one of the competitors, is retrenching about 3,600 employees. The ballpark figure. There are a whole range of reasons why they have said they are retrenching. Part of the reasons, including profitability. We don't know whether it's profitability on the wages of the CEO or profitability generally, of the workers of Pick and Pay and of the entity as a whole. But it begins to show you the kind of the specific market that you're going to be participating in. And now, given that, which is an indication, to what extent do you believe that the Walmart Massmart merger would have an impact on job creation in both the short and long-term terms? I mean, we know that you are not entering into the deal for the good of the workers, for the good of the South African economy, but you get into the deal based on its profitability. But to what extent will this have an impact given what Pick and Pay is doing now? The second point is, are you saying trade unions, in particular Zakhao, is negotiating in bad faith or is negotiating on behalf of your competitors or is negotiating on behalf of workers outside the sector? Historically, in South Africa, the trade union movement has not only played the role of representing workers in the shop floor, but is more interested on the political and economic conditions of the workers that they represent, not only within the same company, but within the same sector, and all of that. But the way in which you
I think has structured paragraph 10, is it 10? No, 12. Paragraph 12 begins to suggest that throughout all these negotiations, you are of the view that Sakau in particular and generally, because trade unions operate differently, and I think, well, in South Africa they operate differently from wherever Masmat may have established themselves, and we don't even know if they still do operate where Masmat has established itself. Now, the last point, which is on point six, the question of foreign investors, attractiveness, and what the portfolio committee should be cognizant of, and the perception thereof. Look, I mean, that's just one point which we may obviously, or have to obviously take into consideration. But that's not the only point which the portfolio committee, or rather members of parliament, will take into consideration. And I think the issues are obviously stipulated, you know, throughout. There's always talk about us being careful not to threaten foreign direct investment, you know, not to create a perception that South Africa is not receptive of foreign investors and all of that. And I think one of the reasons, and I'm sure I stand for correction, this is one of those peculiar cases wherein a company comes and merges with a local company and creates this kind of a discourse, you know, in the country. And you have to ask yourself as to what is it that makes Walmart so special that it gets so much attention, so that when there are all those issues which are still being dealt with in court and all of that, but ask yourself that particular question, why so much noise around the Walmart investment? Anywhere in the world where there is foreign direct investment, you know, people get excited, there are going to be jobs, the economy will grow, you know, workers' conditions will improve and all of those things. But why in this particular case, I hope when you go and sleep, you know, you think about it, why in this particular case there's been this kind of furor. So it's not a general point about foreign investment, it's a particular point about you know, Masmat. I mean, Walmart. Thank you, Chair.
There was a question asked, I think, by Ms. Marina, and the response was that we don't know how much is manufactured locally, and he said it's a matter of trade policy and all that. But as Walmart, you basically depend on long-term procurement. I just wanted to understand you here. In planning, by this time, if you're long in here, you've already concluded on the transaction with Masmat. You've taken over 61% of Masmat. And obviously, you know who does what and where they procure what. And if you say you don't know and depend more on long-term, I just want to understand that. And if you say long-term, what does that mean? What is long-term? And all issues that were raised around challenges internationally, especially on inequalities in terms of subsidization versus, you know, the challenges or the concerns or the cautions that the presenters posed around unfair competition in relation to that, that is importation issue versus local content issue. I hope you understand my question. So I just want to understand that, your opinion around that. And then on your rural versus urban investment, you said you do have, you are committed to investing in communities generally in South Africa. And I wanted to find out, in terms of your, I guess, a budget that I don't know what you call it in your company, but there is social responsibility budget. And how is that, how are you, I know you are new in South Africa, especially the new role player and the coach, because you only 51% of what is already existing. But in terms of the question, the way I understood it, I thought perhaps they wanted to understand your role going forward in terms of rural, rural empowerment and development in general.
Madam Chairperson, perhaps if I can start by just clearing up. I'm a South African citizen. I've been working in Maswan for 11 years now, and I'm not. I was originally the CEO. I work for Maswan and South African company. So, if I may respectfully decline to answer any questions on the campaign.
Can I just interject? Well, the question is not about Pick and Pay. The question is about, well, Pick and Pay shedding jobs, which was in the same sector, and how do you see yourself creating jobs in the short and in the long term, as much Walmart.
Yes, we will create jobs by growing the business, and our calculations estimate that we will employ an additional 15,000 people against Maswan's current 30,000 people over the next 5 years. I can't comment on the employment levels in other companies. Again, I would suggest that an economist is best positioned to answer those questions.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, I again in no way suggested that Sukarno negotiates in bad faith. Certainly in terms of, again, the labour law is very clear on these things. Collective bargaining, even in sector level bargaining, is encouraged. I was merely referring to their role in the competition tribunal hearing, and that was the extent of my comments. In terms of, I will take your advice, Honourable Member, and I will sleep on tonight why Walmart has attracted so much attention. It's perhaps occupied my mind for the last 12 months. Yes, perhaps, Madam Chairperson, if I could try and address your question. Let me just do the one that's top of my mind. Our corporate social investment spend is 1% of our profits, and we direct that spend and report on it every year in our sustainability report. And we focus in the areas of education, rural development of rural women, and of the youth. I can't account specifically how we do that. But I know we're aligned to Umzumbungo, the Women's Development Fund. Generally, the way we manage TSI is we identify government policy in the areas we're interested, and then we work very closely with government departments in the spending of that money. So all of our money that's been, say, in school feeding schemes, growing food for schools, is done in conjunction with the Department of Education or the Department of Agriculture. So we just work, we spend all that money, it's compulsory, and then we work very closely with government on how to spend that. In terms of... I would guess it's over 100 million a year that we spend in corporate social business. I hope my math is right. Yes, in terms of trying to understand that we procure, in terms of long-term, what I was trying to refer to is if we're procuring from a supplier, wherever they're located, so this isn't biased, but let me, for the point of this debate, talk about a South African supplier. Let's say a South African supplier that was manufacturing bribes. If, for a temporary reason, i.e. a currency move, or perhaps a batch of brides appeared in Dubai that's fallen off the back of a ship, perhaps. We wouldn't switch supply to that supplier because of a short-term cost advantage. To us, it's much more important that the source of supply is reliable and that we constantly get known prices than just moving our procurement around the world to respond to short-term price reductions. And in that respect, I'm probably talking in the order of years. So sure, if there became an economic change, such as happened in China, where many goods were made cheaper than, let's say, they were produced previously in Europe, we would, once there's a permanent economic shift, we would, the goods procured by our suppliers, I must note, would probably change direction. But short-term stuff, we don't get involved with. Let me just make a point. In terms of food, mass market imports nothing. All the importation of food and the trading of food is done by the suppliers. It's done in terms of current government legislation, often in terms of duties that are imposed by the Department of Treasury. And in particular, let me point to why I referred to trade policy, is if Brazil starts subsidizing sugar, for instance, which has happened from time to time, the response needs to be from the South African government to, in terms of the World Trade Organization rules, name them as breaking the World Trade Organization's rules, accuse them of dumping, apply a punitive tariff onto the imports from that country, and that stops the import. I absolutely promise you we have no control over that whatsoever. I couldn't really tell you where the sugar we sell comes from. We have a local sugar industry which is highly concentrated. We have a duty protection which is quite complicated, which is put in place by the Department of Treasury. And in any bag, you couldn't separate out the imported rice from imported sugar from the local sugar. It's an important issue and needs to be debated. It's just got nothing really to do with us, or specifically this merger. Yes, I'm reminded I'm supposed to answer the question about subsidization, but I think my answer about trade policy is exactly the same. Subsidization is covered in terms of the World Trade Organization rules. And certainly should we at any point feel that South Africa, will identify that South African producers are being prejudiced by dumping, we would be the first to go to the Department of Treasury, or the Department of Trade and Industry, and ask them for assistance in protecting that flood of temporary cheap products that is going to affect the local foods producing industry.
Okay, I guess the Vietnam I guess all questions were answered. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I'll try to repeat my answer there. I wasn't suggesting that public interest issues either don't exist or are unimportant. I'm just pointing out that the complexity when you have to balance the public interest of competition, i.e. competition is good for the public because they get better prices, versus the cost of the public interest, which may be in terms of jobs and crimes. Both exist. The Act doesn't give, in my opinion, and let me say I'm not a lawyer, doesn't give much direction about how to balance those. They both exist, they're both real, they're both important. The Act is not specific in how to balance.
Can I give you the last chance? We way above the allocation time.
Yeah, actually, that you agree with me that, it is justified that the public interest has a balance. I mean, in this is what you say in the presentation. That's the
You agree?
You agree?
Yes.
Okay. Any other person? No. Thank you very much. I'm sorry about the secretary is there. Obviously, there could be many questions. I can see that the members are very interested deeper into understanding the opportunity that they are holding with you, especially around this measure, which their participation is for the first time over other measures that happened in South Africa. So, we want to appreciate the fact that you came and came to us and responded. Thank you very much. Can we then give an opportunity to members to go and have lunch together with yourself? We are very generous with this provide for you. So I'm told lunch will be outside. The senior lunch provided outside. We will come back and